The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm here at the Vintage Conservatory on King Street, downtown Toronto. This place is gorgeous. Very excited. Juan Marie Ramos is joining me now, a winemaker for Marques de Bourbon. And what I'm excited, A, that I mangled the name, but I got it out of the way, is I don't do nearly enough when it comes to the wines of Portugal. Juan, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start by making fun of me. Can you say your full name and the winery so people listening can realize how badly I mangled that?
It's not only you. So I have a very hard name to pronounce outside of Portugal. My name is João Maria de Melo Osório, Portugal Ramos. And the João gets quite hard when we're not Portuguese.
The João gets hard, but the middle part gets hard and the end part gets hard as well. Usually I will start with the autobiography and I want to hear all about your journey and your father and all things Portuguese wine. Like that's a lot of what I want to do today is for the listeners to just learn more about Portugal beyond port. But let's start with the wine that we're going to be trying. And as we're recording this on July 8th, it is available at the LCBO. You can find it there. But what do people need to know about this wine that you are going to be talking about at LCBOs all across Toronto?
Okay, so this is our flagship wine. It's Marquês de Borba, produced by our family winery that is named after my father, João Portugal Ramos. Marquês de Borba is by far our most important brand. It's a wine from Alentejo, southern part of Portugal. So it's a continental climate. So when you drink this wine, you expect everything that a continental climate offers you. You feel the sun, you feel the harsh winter. We want that this wine takes you to Alentejo. It's a full body wine with structure. And it's a wine made for our way of drinking wine, that is to pair the wine with food. So it's a wine that all this structure and all this freshness and all this fruitiness must be together with the food.
How hard is it, because you said freshness and also continental climate, this is a hot area. How difficult is it to, because you're going to get big, you're going to get power. It's hard not to where these wines are made, but to also maintain freshness.
So we, in Estremoz, where we are based, we are at 450 meters high. So we have very warm days, but during the summer we have quite cold nights. So to have a dinner outside, usually you need to put a sweater. What is nice here is what we need to do more and more is we want the grapes to be protected from the direct sun. So we are changing a bit our way of trailing the vineyards. And also you need the right moment of picking up the grapes. Another advantage that we have is that we are very close to the biggest artificial lake in Europe. And nowadays we have lots of foggy mornings, and this fog protects the grapes from the morning until midday.
Right.
So we only get, but it's a lot, we have like 8 hours of very extreme heat.
You mentioned about changing the way about protecting the grapes. I was reading just in your bio about 5 years ago, the development of planting a new vineyard training system. Was that done in order to keep the grapes a little bit cooler, to deal with maybe hotter temperatures? Is there a connection between the two?
So we did a project 5 years ago, and the idea was to make a more prepared vineyard for the future, that you have more machines that can work on this vineyard, and also the grapes to be more protected from the sun heat. It was already developed in some countries. We developed with those ideas, we applied for the Portuguese viticulture, and we are quite happy with the results. And indeed, we feel that this vineyard is much more resilient to sunburn. It's more resilient to water problems. So it's a vineyard that is prepared for the challenge that we have in front of us.
Right. And important, just not for just today, but for the future.
There you go.
On the nose, and I should tell people, we'll talk about just how and why there's such quality in terms of price for Portuguese reds. On the nose, this is a big, rich, luscious nose. Some perfumed notes as well. There's a lot going on the nose on this wine.
When we talk about Portuguese wines, a thing that we want that the consumer retains a bit is we don't talk so much about the varieties, we talk more about the style of the region. And this will be a classic wine from Alentejo, that you have the fruitiness, you have the full body, you have more than fruit, you have some balsamic notes, and this comes from the amount of different grape varieties we blend into our wine. So we want to have the good parts of many different grape varieties.
And there's a good finish to this as well. Nice dark fruit. The remarkable thing is this is a big wine and yet only goes for around $16 at the LCBO. And that is a hell of a value. Is it because the soil or the landscape is less expensive than, say, if you were in Burgundy? Is it the grapes are not as expensive? Like, I'm always wondering why Portugal is a great area for quality value wine, where it usually tastes better than what the price tag is.
I think it's many reasons, but the most important, I think, is because wine is part of our diet. And wine should not be a luxury for us. So wine must be present in our meals, in our life. And of course, we have space to make very high-value wines in Portugal, but we need to have the day-to-day wine. And in Portugal, this will be already a mid-range mm-hmm. wine. But we have very good entry-level wines with fantastic value for money. And this is the main idea is we drink wine during the meals as we drink water or as we have a piece of bread. It's part of our meal, and so should not be very expensive because we want to afford it and that the wine is possible to be part of our normal lives.
Plum and violet is also what I'm getting on the mid palate. And I'm sorry to keep going back to the tasting, but for me, because I don't drink a ton of Portuguese wines, I always like the experience because it's almost like I want to update my own palate, you know, my own just memory of what I should be getting from these wines. So it is really cool just to sit and kind of intellectualize what I'm tasting here.
The violets that you mentioned, usually they are associated with our most popular grape variety in Portugal, that is the Touriga Nacional. So it's a grape variety that gives a lot of the violet notes.
We'll get back into, I want to talk about the varietals and more just about the characteristics of Alentejo. Let's talk a little bit about you. Because of who your father is, was this destined that you would be here today talking to me?
I have no idea, but so my father did something very nice, I think, that he never pushed us. We didn't understand he was pushing us to the business, so he did it very naturally for me and my sister. When my father started, he started as a wine consultant, and me and my sister, we spent hours and hours in the car with my father driving from one winery to the other. Then originally we are from Lisbon, my parents are from Lisbon, and they bought a house in the middle of Estremoz, where we live now, where he planted the first vineyards. And when he bought it, we were not even born. And this house was basically to be a hub in Lisbon and the wineries he was making consultancy at the time. And then we saw everything from the beginning. We saw the first vineyards, we saw the first brick of the winery. So we saw this project growing from zero until what is today. And of course, when you see this, you get excited and you want to be part of it. And I think the second generation is very motivated to be in the company. We are five siblings. For the moment, only two are working. But we feel it as a family project, and we feel everyone very much involved.
I was watching a video in of your father, and he talked about that was one of his passions, and one of the things he loved was being able to hand it down to his children and grandchildren, and to keep it within the family. That is the 7-minute video of your father. I think that was the main thing that stuck out for me.
Yes, I think. So if my father didn't felt that was an interest of the next generation, for sure he would have sold the business and been enjoying more life now. But I think he enjoys much more now, feeling that he motivated the sons to join him. And who knows later. So now it's our goal, it's to put the grandsons into this. And this is the nice part of the family business, is that you want to pass it to the next one as good or even better as you receive it. And this is our goal. And in a way, the wine business is very related with the families, because we live there. It's a wine very related for your family. We use our names to promote our brands. We feel that being a family business, we have many advantages than others don't have, and some disadvantages, of course. But I feel in wine, it's a big advantage to be part of a family company.
Was there a moment when you realized that this is what you wanted to do? Was there a moment when you realized the passion I have for wine, I want to follow in my family's footsteps?
I think there was not a moment that I understood that. It was there was a moment that I understand that I didn't want to do anything else. It was not, okay, this is wine that I want. I said, no, I don't want the other things. This is what makes sense for me. But I don't remember the moment, but it was when you have to decide, when you are like 15, you need to decide what you're going to study, if it's science, economics, or I don't even remember, arts. Mm-hmm. I choose science. And then after science, it was very clear that I want to go to agronomic school.
Moving ahead a little bit, I'd love to hear about the differences in some of the harvests. You worked a harvest in Chile, you were in Stellenbosch. What are some of your favorite memories, and how different was it, those two wine regions of the world?
It was a good time. So I started to, my first harvest was in Madrid, in the University of Madrid, where I made my thesis. And we're making like micro vinification, was very, very interesting as well. Then when I moved to Chile, I was impressed with the quality of the vinification, especially in the whites. I learned a lot when I was there. Then I started to work with my father. And in 2018, if I recall, I went to South Africa. And the main idea is they were having a big trouble with water, with lack of water. And I wanted to understand how could the winery work without water. So I was there 1 month to see how were they dealing with the drought. And it was a very good school as well.
Love to hear a little more about your father. What do people need to know? And it's funny, I was reading up about just his impact on just the Portuguese wine world in its totality. What do people need to know about your dad?
My father, he was is a very energetic person, and he was never afraid of going forward and of investing and of risking. As you, I don't know if, so in Portugal we are crazy about producing wine, and you see this a bit in our Portuguese community in Canada, that they buy grapes from wherever and they vinify at home. So we love to make wine. It's part of our DNA. And my grandmother from my father's side, she had a estate in close to Lisbon. And this was the main reason that my father decided to go to winemaking. But then we had the revolution in 74. The family of my grandmother decided it was safer to sell the estate, so they sold it. And my father became a bit without a job. And here comes a funny part about my father's life. So for a period of time, he was a professional poker player.
Really?
Yes. So he was playing poker full speed and high stakes. And suddenly a friend of him told him, João, I need someone to come to work with me in olive oil. So, yeah, it looks interesting. I mean, my father has never worked in his life, like 5 years in a row playing poker. I started off college to a poker school. Yeah, it looks interesting. I don't mind to go to work in olive oil. How much is the salary? And when he checks the wage, he says, this is ridiculous. I get much more playing poker. And a good friend of him also told him, look, you don't be crazy. You should accept this job and you need to start to work because this is not a life. So the first harvest my father did was in olive oil. And then he started with the same owner of the olive oil business. He started to make a small wine from Alentejo. It was the first private wine launched after the revolution in Alentejo. Alentejo was very affected by the communist revolution. And this was the first private initiative in the wine. And he won the best wine of Portugal that year. And Alentejo was a very tiny thing at the moment. In this, we're talking about the 80s. Then another friend of my father called me, João, I saw that you make a fantastic wine with José Maria, that was his friend. Can you make my wine as well? So 1, 2, 3, 4. And suddenly we started to make wine for 40 different wineries. And there is a famous tasting, I would say, like in the middle of the 80s, that they choose the best 10 Portuguese wine and 6 are made by my father.
Really?
Yes. So then at a certain point, when he bought the place where we live now, he planted the first 10 hectares of vineyard, and then he started to bottle his own wine. And the thing is, he started without having nothing. He was never afraid of going forward. So it was we had a very fast growth. So from 92 until 2025, we are now in 4 different wine regions. And this is because my father likes to make things. He likes to plant the vineyards. He likes to decide what style of wine he wants to make. And when we go to a region, we don't go and we buy bulk wine and we just bottle under our own name. No, we believe in that the projects, it's important that you control the vineyard, you control the winery. So we want to make everything from the beginning.
So it's not just going to Vino Verde. It's going there, finding a vineyard, either buying the land or having the relationship with the farmers and working on the viticulture and the vinification.
Completely. It's our way of working. So we plant vineyards. And another thing that is very important is to have relation with the local people as well and the local farmers. In Douro, in Vinho Verde, and in Alentejo, we have lots of partnership with the local farmers. that maybe it would be easier to plant our vineyard than forget those local farmers, but we believe that the business is more integrated in the society if you still have this partnership with the local farmers. You divide the risk between yourself and the farmer and also the benefits from the business.
And also, they've been there for so long, they know the vineyards, they know the climate and, you know, what to do in terms of pruning and yield management and all that sort of stuff. And I've always said it's such an important thing for any good winery to have, if someone else is growing your grapes, you have to have such a good relationship with those farmers because you need trust and you need buy-in from their side as well.
Completely. We need trust. It's funny. We don't have any contract with any of our suppliers of grapes, especially in Alentejo. And they are with us for 25 years. So it's a handshake. It's enough for us. Our word, it's everything. And we interfere a lot in our partner's vineyards. So we have a viticulture team that I'm part of. And we go and we advise the farmer, how do we see that the grapes should come to the winery, what should they do, what treatments must they do. And as we are in more different areas, we have vineyards all over Alentejo, we are a bit aware of everything that's going on. So if we see that there is a new disease or a new challenge, we advise the farmer from another place. So we want everyone to be in contact.
What's one major difference when it comes to growing grapes in Alentejo versus Douro versus Vino Verde? These are three such different areas. What's one thing that stands out or how different they all are?
So between Douro and the Alentejo that we are, the main difference is the slopes of Douro. The hills of Douro are very high, very steep. But regarding the climate between Douro and Alentejo, it's quite similar, to be honest. I think maybe it's even a bit milder in Alentejo than in Douro. Then in Vinho Verde, where we are now in Ponte Lima, it's a completely different climate. It's Atlantic climate. Lots of rain during the maturation, so it can be tricky during the harvest. We have too much vigor that we are not used to it. So in Estremoz and in Douro, the vineyards are always suffering a bit. So you feel that they are stressing to get the maturation until the end. In Vinho Verde now, you see green everywhere, grapes everywhere. It's another championship. But we need to adapt. And of course, being as more adapted to the to the reality of Alentejo and Douro, we have a guy in Vinho Verde that is helping us facing these new challenges as well.
Early on, when you were just rising in the company, did you feel pressure, and maybe still do, to uphold what your father started in terms of quality? Because, you know, your names are here. You know, the winery. You know, your names are on the wine bottles. Do you feel pressure because this is such a family business?
Now, of course, we feel pressure, but a good pressure. Mm-hmm. So my father's still very much involved in the business, and in a way, not only me, but all the team that works with us. I think we breathe a lot the company's mentality, and we want to make the best wine we can year after year with consistency, and we want to make our style of wines. And this is the main pressure we have from my father to the next generation. And a big advantage of this pressure is because it's not only on me, it's me and my sister, so we can share the pressure, even though it's big. And we had the luck of heritage of having the team that my father built with us still. So we are there is a team in the middle, so between both generations, that is very good, and they are still very much so. They saw us growing since we were born. But we get very well with them, and it's good that this is a very smooth transition from generations.
Who brings the wine for birthdays, Christmas, family dinners? Who brings the wine for the dinner?
That is not a specific rule. So we do something I think is interesting, is we usually don't drink our wines at our home.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to try other people's wine because we learn a lot. We see the good and the bad. So many times if it's a casual dinner or a casual lunch, we have other people's wine. If it's my father's birthday or something, we have our wines with someone else's as well. But by a normal day, we don't have our wine at home. We drink the competition.
That's smart.
Yeah.
I mean, just to see what you can learn, what can you improve on, and what's out there.
It's very important, and to have a notion of what people are doing different and what are they innovating. So it's very good that, and it's very important that we try other wines from other producers in Portugal, other producers in the world. And even for the consumer in general, I think it's much fun to have different wines than to have every day the same wine. So there are so many good wines in the world. You should risk a bit more.
Hard question to answer because it's such a big one. But what do people need to know about Portuguese wines, and especially red? Because everyone thinks about port, and I think Vinho Verde, it has a very sort of distinctive thing. But as you said earlier, you don't plant your flag with one grape. Bordeaux is Cabernet or Merlot. Burgundy is Pinot. We can go on and on about every region. But as you said, you guys are much more of a blend and much more about the geography than the grape variety. I was wondering if you could just help people when they want to try Portuguese red wines. What do they need to know? What do they need to look for?
Okay, so just one small detail. The blending part of Portugal, it's a very long history.
Yeah.
And it was because the old vineyards, very many years ago, they were being planted all together, many different varieties together. And the main idea behind this was to have consistency year after year. Because if one year was not good to another variety, maybe it was good for the other one. So you can balance in the vineyard.
Right.
And this is one of our reasons for being blending so much. Is because with blend, you can have a more consistent wine year after year. Regarding the style of the wines, so as I said in the beginning, we are not used to... So I don't finish my dinner and I go to watch the news having a glass of red wine. We don't do it often in Portugal. I don't do it. So where we have wine is at the table. But I think when you have wine with the meal, neither the wine, neither the dish should stand out. They should be together in balance. And for that, you need gastronomic wines. They should not be too aromatic. They should not be like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, no idea. They should be balanced and they should not be standing out too much. And I think the idea of this wine is this. It's a wine with tannin, with concentration, fresh. I think even though Portugal is a warm climate, we are making very fresh wines. So we have the concentration of the fruit, but we have a high acidity in the wines, balanced acidity. And then, of course, usually from a sunny weather, you get wines from 13.5 until 14.5 alcohol degrees. But it's what you must expect having a Portuguese wine. It's a full body wine usually, mm-hmm. especially from Douro and Alentejo.
Is there one grape above all others? I think I'm asking this more from a marketing standpoint than anything else, than about quality. Is there one grape that stands out? For me, it was always Torriga Nacional. But is there one grape that can help bring new people into wine?
No, there are many fantastic grapes in Portugal. We are the second country with more indigenous grape varieties in the world. I think we are number one with more different grape varieties per square meter. So we have so many grape varieties that I think is a mistake that we bet only in one.
Right.
So I think what we must do is we must keep on betting on the quality of the Portuguese wine year after year. And we should not go behind the trends. You know, we must make our style of wine.
Right.
And be sure where we are and making year after year, the fantastic quality that Portugal has to offer. And it's a country that, being so small, we have so many different regions, so many different blends, that you have all styles of wines inside of one country. So just, I think we must try to bottle the regions. And when we open a bottle of Marquês de Borba in Canada, that people feel that they are having a vintage and a wine from Alentejo.
Yes, bottling the region versus bottling one single grape is sort of the philosophy.
For me, it makes more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Bordeaux has some similarities as well. They're all blends. How do you balance traditional versus modern? Because obviously your father, such an important person, and you know, the fact that he's making wines all over the place shows that he is experimental, that he's not afraid of taking chances. But I'm always curious how you balance embracing the traditions of Portuguese wine from the past versus modern winemaking as well.
40 years ago, when my father started as a wine consultant, to have an idea, he was the first one to install a cooling system to control temperatures in Alentejo.
I bet people around him were like, what are you doing?
Why are you spending money on this? Of course, it's crucial to have temperature control during fermentation.
Yeah.
But regarding tradition, so this will be a modern part, so to say, a very easy modern part. But regarding tradition, what my father did all the time was instead of thinking that he was the guy who knew everything. He said, no, the guy who knows everything is the guy who's inside the winery every day. And we call those people adegueiro, so the cellar hand. And usually people would not manage without without a superior degree, you know, like people that are working in the winery every day. And my father always get very well with them and just corrected a bit what he think should be corrected, but not changing the way they were making the wines. So he kept on using the vagars. Vagar is kind of a swimming pool where we foot through the grapes. So my father didn't quit this. And in our winery, we have 8 vagars. So in some wineries where my father started to make the wine as a consultant, they had the talhas, the clay pots. And my father kept on using the clay pots because he thought that was giving that winery the identity of that winery. But of course, maybe it changed using the same tools, but improving the process. I think that is how you should put tradition and innovation together.
So yeah, taking the stuff that's worked in the past and just find a way to make it better.
And we should not change everything because we are not the brightest persons ever existed on earth. So I think some things that I've been doing for many, many years, there is nothing to improve. It's there. And some things that I've been doing for many, many years, they don't make sense. You can change it. But what is going well, I think you should not change it and keep it because this gives you the history and the tradition behind the region.
It's a good answer. You're going to be at the LCBO talking to, your day is going to be spent talking to people at the LCBO, wine media within the Toronto area. What are the main messages you want to get out to them for them to spread to other wine lovers throughout Canada?
No, it's not an easy question, but so basically I will try to speak about Alentejo. It's the main reason I'm here today. It's to speak about the Marquês do Borba and the Alentejo region. And the main message I think I want to pass is we should look more for Portuguese wines and give a chance to Portuguese wines. And I think it's happening for many regions. And one of them is the tourism. So we feel that we have lots of tourists coming to Portugal year after year, many of them from Canada. And when you go there, it's mandatory that you have Portuguese wine because we in Portugal, we only drink Portuguese wine. And it's good that the consumers are starting to drink Portuguese wine in Portugal. And then, of course, if they have a good experience there and they come back to Canada, if they see a Portuguese wine, they open a door for it. And we are facing in the world difficult times for wine. But for example, in Canada, one of the categories that is increasing is Portuguese wine. So I think we are on the right track. And this is due to the consumers and the LCBO giving a chance of Portuguese wine. And the main message, I think, is to keep on betting on Portugal because we are prepared for this bet.
You know, the interesting thing is, I never thought about this, because of what's going on with Donald Trump and tariffs and the American dollar and the rhetoric of America saying, oh, Canada should be the 51st state. I know a lot of people who used to travel to Florida, Arizona, California, and they're looking for somewhere else and they're looking for somewhere warm. So many people, so many Canadians I know are traveling to Portugal. It's warm. It's a direct flight. You're not flying to Stellenbosch, which I've done, which is a day of travel. And it is interesting. I think you'll probably get a lot of Canadians now in the next bunch of years learning more about your wines because they're looking for alternatives beyond going down to Florida.
Yes, and for us, we need to take advantage of this situation, of course. So for us, a fantastic opportunity that Canadians are going there. But I think they were coming as well a lot before this Trump and tariff situation. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that they go there because you always create a special relation if you have the wine in the place that the wine is born. It's different. And I think we are a country that is a very welcoming country. So naturally, Portuguese people like to receive people from wherever. Mm-hmm. So if a Spanish guy goes to Portugal, instead of us speaking Portuguese, we will speak French. We will speak Spanish. Yeah. If a French guy comes, we try to speak French, even though we don't speak fluently. So we like to have people in our country. It's in our nature. So of course, I think people feel very welcome when they come to Portugal. And trying our wines with our gastronomy, I think it's a big advantage for our wines when they are then in the markets.
I was wondering, I'm going to try just a little bit more of the flagship, but if you could tell people there are 3 other wines that are here. For those, you have to go to sylvestre.ca, sylvestre sylvester.ca, sylvester.ca, to find out about some of the other wines from your portfolio. But just wondering if you could talk about some of the other wines that you guys do.
Okay, so basically all the other wines we have here are all under the Marquês de Borba umbrella. And to something interesting about the Marquês de Borba, so in Borba, it's the AOC where we are. So we have Alentejo, and then there is a smaller AOC that is Borba. It's a small village. And the Marquês de Borba is an uncle of my father. And when my father started in Alentejo, he needed a brand. And my mother had the idea of my father to talk with his uncle and to ask permission to use his title in the wine. So that's where Marquês de Borba came from. And here we have four different wines. So the first one we talk about, the Marquês de Borba Colheita Red. And then we have Marquês de Borba Colheita White. And then we have two old vineyards, white and red. The main difference here is the vinification methods and the age of the vineyards. When we go to old vines, we talk about 40-year-old vineyards, more or less, lower yields. And without being so much focused on the age of the vineyards is the potential of this grape. So we have our most expensive and iconic wine is Marquês de Borba Reserva Red, that is not here. We don't want to produce a lot of wine, even though that we had the potential, because we want the wine to be sold out every year. We want to be kind of a niche thing. And we had so many good grapes that could go to this wine that we are not using. So that's why we decided to launch the Marquês de Borba Old Vines Red. It's the many vineyards, most of them, they are not ours. They are from farmers that were there many years ago. We identify clear that these vineyards have a very good potential. And we get these grapes, talking about the red, harvest by hand. We cool them down for one day in a cooling chamber. And then we pass it by a sorting table. So if there is a berry that doesn't feel so good, or a stem or whatever, we take everything. So the fruit goes in perfect conditions to the vagar. And in the vagar, we do the food through the fermentation on an open vagar. And this gives origin to a very big red wine with a fantastic aging potential. Regarding the white, the Colheita and the old vines, the Colheita, both of them have a similar grape variety, that is the Arinto, is the base of both of them, and is for me is the best Portuguese white grape variety, because it goes well from the northern tip of Portugal until the southern tip of Portugal, so it's very adapted to many different climates. And the main difference of this wine is basically it's the fermentation of the old vines take place in used 500 liters Hungarian oak barrels.
The softness of, and we'll end in a second because you got a busy day, but of the flagship of the Marquês de Borba that you can get at the LCBO for 14% alcohol and a big nose and nice, you know, the mid palate is full. There is a softness to the end of this wine, which I think speaks to the acidity and also speaks that yeah, this wine here is going to go with a lot of different food. I don't mean to harp back on the price, but now where everyone's cutting back on things, everyone is looking for value, but still not feeling like they're being shortchanged on quality. And I think this wine sort of hits that fine line between the two. So, you know, just cheers to you guys. This is a very good wine.
Thank you very much.
Just as we, and also your the videos, your place is gorgeous. Can people come and visit? Because when I've seen the overhead shots and everything, the vineyard where you guys are is beautiful.
Yes, they can come and visit with pleasure. So we have a small tourism operation, still very homemade. So we can have meals in the winery, but it needs to be booked in advance. So it cannot be from one day to the other. You cannot knock on the door and have a lunch.
Yeah.
But if you book in 1 week in advance, it's very easy to have a lunch there or dinner. And another thing that we do is we do everyday tours to the wineries and small tastings of wine with local cheese and the local olive oil.
People want to go and find out more about the winery. Where do they go? What's the website?
jportugalramos.com.
And I'll make sure all that is on the Instagram and all the promotion of this. Joan, thank you so much for being part of the podcast. Good luck with the rest of your time here in Canada. Apologies about the traffic and appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.